Welcome to the Deadly Departed podcast, where the veil between the living and the dead is just a whisper away. I'm Jock, and along with my colleagues in Paranormal Daily News, we will be your guides through the shadowy realms of the paranormal and the unexplained. In each episode, we will dive into the eerie and the enigmatic with the help of today's leading experts in parapsychology, science, and the supernatural. Prepare to uncover the secrets that lurk in the dark and explore the mysteries that defy explanation. Let's embark on this journey now. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are. This is an exciting time. It's been long time since we've been on. Welcome back to Deadly Departed. For those of you who have been asleep for the last 6 months, we've been off with a lot that's going on. There's been fires in North Carolina. We've had Hurricane Helene that had destroyed so many things here, and I was out on the ground helping wherever I could. Then there was so many passings, not only people that we knew, people and family, just everything kind of got on us. So we're back. Deadly Departed is back. We've got some great guests that's coming up as well. And also, you're here with my new, I don't say new, because he's not new, because all you guys kind of know him, the science editor, the man with the science knowledge or the science arguments, who pisses off a lot of skeptics in his days. It is my very good friend and colleague, Craig. How are you doing, my friend? This is awesome that we're now co-hosting.
Yes, yes. Oh, I'm excited about this. So, hello, everybody. Jock and I have been talking between each other for years, and now you actually get to hear part of these conversations. The really fun part about this is we're both pretty much topic experts in these fields. We have a lot of knowledge. Jock has gone back to get his freaking master's in parapsychology.
And then moving on to PhD, although I've just been told how much it's going to cost me. So it's not going to change anything. It just means I need to work harder. But yeah, we've been talking. Craig and I have had tons of conversations. In fact, we often, when we're talking about the direction of, and we'll talk about the direction that PDN is going just in a minute, but when we talk about the direction, of course, we've got Linda, who's another editor, who's part of our team. We've got other team members as well. But Craig and I talk semi-regularly when we can, and we normally get into business and then we talk about subject matters, you know. And it got to the point just about a month and a half ago, wasn't it, we were like, you know what, let's get Deadly Departed launched again and have these conversations that we have, that's great, that we enjoy, and share it with everybody else. And if you don't enjoy it, then don't come back and don't listen, I suppose. So but anyway, there's a lot that's happening in PDN. PDN is still growing. We've got great writers, and we thank all of our writers there. You can see that we've got a great diversification between academic writing, scientific stuff that we discuss as well as you know, hauntings and, you know, haunted places, and some of our other writers that love their history and come on. And we're really grateful that we've got a great team. And there's a lot more happening. We've got, you know, Craig and I have been working on PDN books as well. So we've got a publishing division that we're launching very soon. We've been working on that, believe it or not, for I don't know how long, two and a half years or something. Is it? I got to ask Linda, because it's been even maybe longer. We've been working on it for years, because it's not a case of where we're just going to open up something and wing it. This is, you know, we're opening up a whole publishing division, which is professionally getting done. So, wow, we've got a lot that's coming up, Craig, haven't we?
Yeah, we do. And it's going to be pretty exciting. You know, PDN is pretty much a paranormal powerhouse. And
yeah,
just we're going to take this even farther. And I'm really excited about that. Part of it is this podcast. Woohoo!
I know, because there's a lot for us to discuss. And actually, we'll mention one of the new features we've got at the end, but we want to get right into this because We're going to jump into a discussion that Craig and I have had many times. We're actually going to kind of review and discuss a book, and you're either going to love it or hate it. So here we go. We're diving in to this one. Now, I don't know whether you can see that, whether it's upside down or not, I'm not sure, but this is Ghosted. We're talking about Ghosted. Can you actually see that, Craig? Great. Is it back to front? I mean, look at
it. It looks fine.
It's looking good. I'm looking at it and I'm like, wait a minute, I don't look right on the screen. But we're talking about Ghosted. And, well, let me jump in. Like, Craig, let's just give your feelings on it quickly, and then I'll give my feelings on it, then we'll rip right, we'll not rip it apart, we're going to rip right into it.
Okay, so first of all, I was asked to review this book for the Journal of Parapsychology, and I thought I was going to open up the book and just kind of breeze through it and read some interesting stuff about ghosts, and no, it wasn't anything like that. This is a college textbook. I'm like, what? The writing is dense, it's difficult, long paragraphs, difficult words, all that kind of thing, which, you know, I'm totally down for that. I just wasn't expecting it. And then I get in there and I see these graphs. Oh my gosh, this book has like graphs of things, with the paranormal, of, like, you know, lines going to different places. And I was like, I don't understand any of that. So I talked to my spirit guide, which is a Chihuahua, and he said, oh, dude, relax. You don't need to worry about this. It's not going to be on the test. You've been out of school since the Stone Ages. So I kind of settled down and looked at this a little bit more. And, you know, basically, it has a lot of really good information if you're interested in psychology, but it's a difficult read. You have to sit there and work at it and go through it and, you know, basically put your brain into gear, because this is not light reading at all.
It's not.
Yeah. So, Jock, what were your first impressions?
Well, you know, I came to it through a friend of mine. Everybody knows Lloyd Auerbach, who's head of our parapsychology for PDN. And I've trained with Lloyd as well. And I've got massive respect for him. So when Lloyd tells me there's a book coming out and what I think about it, I jump into it thinking it was like Lloyd's book. And of course, as you know, I've been, studying at university doing psychology. So I'm like, you're Craig, I'm like, oh man, this is going to be a great read, something to get my teeth into, to chill out, to get rid of the academia, and to just see where it's coming. It was not what I expected, because some of it was like an entire snooze fest. Now, I want to say that, and for guys, Brian Lair, James Huran, Kenneth Drinkwater, Kieran O'Keefe, who we obviously know, a skeptic from... he's UK and he was on Most Haunted and stuff like that. Dr. Kieran O'Keefe, I actually do respect him as well. Neil Dagnall. It's great work, right? And that's where I want to say that it's, but it's not for everybody, right? I was shocked because it was not what I was expecting. Like you, Craig, I was expecting a great read. Maybe we're going to get some case studies, case histories, look at how they were doing the science behind it, but maybe a bit lighter in respect. I didn't expect it to be like freaking psychological warfare, or, you know, trying to, like, you know, CIA, MI5, MI6, getting right into the mind games and stuff. However, for someone that me that has been studying a lot of academic stuff, the psychology and writing academic papers and things like that, I do get it. I see where they went with it. And I did really enjoy the book, but it was hard going. It is very hard going, and it's not for everybody. And I would say I wish, if there was a weakness, I wish that it had been written more for the lay community, because I think they would have got a lot more people reading it. I think there'd be a lot more discussions about it. I think it should have been less academic. But of course, you do get to the point, and we'll discuss this a bit later. You do get to the point, Craig, where you get right through that aspect. You get rid of that academic stuff, and then you get into, from like chapter 6, chapter 7 onwards, okay, there's some stuff here that we can, that other people will enjoy. So, Ghosted, it is an anomaly.
Yeah. So, in case you're wondering what everybody was talking about in this book, for the review I did, I divided it up into different chapters. And so, in chapter one, they deal with the survey that the Ghost Gang, which is what they call themselves, the Ghost Gang.
It's a cool name.
Totally cool. So they were dividing it up into objective and subjective experiences. But of course, this is, you know, they're not perfectly divided. There's a little bit of mush between the two. And then from there, you know, they're trying to include controls and things. That's the stuff that psychologists do. And this is what they're talking about. And this is why the book gets so dense so quickly.
Yeah.
Talking about the things that psychologists do, which is to break down these individual experiences into different types of things and all these different categories. Stuff that, as a layperson, you're just kind of like, oh, I had an experience. And they're like, oh, no, this was this sort of experience and that sort of experience and the other sort of experience. And this fits into this pigeonhole and that pigeonhole. And there was a lot of that. So, and then in chapter two, they talk about the people that are most likely to experience hauntings. So this is really what I would call.
And you know something, I honestly, and sorry for him, but I think it's important. Chapter two, I also thought that there was a slight skeptical bias in that chapter a little, because it's you can pigeonhole everybody's experiences into this particular way that this is their label. This is their label. This is their label. And I think there could have been a lot more to do. I think there could have been a lot more balance in that. And I think that's possibly a weakness throughout the book.
You know, I would agree with that. And because it was coming, you could see the impact of anomalistic psychology, which is basically a skeptic, how do people fool themselves type of type of profession within academia. So anomalistic psychology, how people fool themselves, was kind of the focus there. And you kind of get this vibe of people are having these experiences, but we can explain them through ordinary means. So there was a bit of that going on. And when you're talking about haunted people, I kind of say, what? Huh? And the reason I do that is because haunted people is like super sensitive. What's the difference? I'm a sensitive person, haunted person. What's the difference?
I tell you what, I will agree to disagree. Right?
Okay.
Because in the field that I've worked in, obviously, as you know, I've been a medium for over two decades, and I've worked, you know, I've worked a lot in possession, obsession cases, things like that. I do think there's an element, and there's something that we need to learn from In Ghosted as well. Just quick flash of the book, in case you haven't seen it, guys. I do think that there are highly sensitive people. There are people that are intuitively open and aware of that. But there are I believe there are haunted people. I've witnessed it. I've seen it. And whether it's brought on, it's probably brought on by their own doing or for any other potential thing. I think there's an element of people are haunted. And that's where the balance, I think, of psychology, psychosis, schizophrenia. There's a very thin line between all of these. I have a strong, and I've got to be careful and scientifically sane belief. I'm not going to say I know, because you can't know anything, and there's a part of the book where they just attack you for that. So I'm going to say that there's a strong leaning in my experience towards, yes, there's highly sensitive people, but I do feel there are haunted people that are brought about by themselves or through occult practices or through other elements or in haunted locations. And I think there's an element of therapy that can come through. And of course, that's another podcast. But I would agree to disagree. Yes, there's HSPs, but I also do feel there's haunted people as well.
Well, I would, if it was me personally, I would say that haunted people are a subcategory of highly sensitive people that have been, sort of had experiences that have triggered a higher sensitivity to these paranormal haunted experiences as opposed to some others. But definitely we're talking about a lot of the same traits there, which is you need the high sensitivity to do any of this. So I think we're kind of coming at this from different sides. I see sort of a broader picture, and you
absolutely,
and you're looking at a more focused version of it, which, and you know, both versions are can be valid.
And I think that that's something that is other for other discussions and things like that as well, because I do think there's elements in the book where I think they could have done more here. And perhaps there's a way, and that's something we can get into when we talk about objective phenomena and subjective analysis or subjective phenomena. But for me, again, there's a lot to love about it. And as you say, there's each chapter has got something that teaches us something that, and you know what, I hate to say, and you're going to hate this, Craig, because I know that you've been on the battleground of the skeptic camp for years, fighting them from the front lines and trying to get your point across, and that's all very admirable. But I actually I love the fact that they had to bring a lot of the skeptical stuff in. I just thought it could have been a lot more balanced, and I think there was a lot of bias in it. But I do feel it was great to bring Kieran O'Keefe in. It was great to bring other skeptics. It was great to have their, hang on, you need to think about this another way. Because, and I don't know if you feel this way as well, I feel, and even through experiences I've had on cases that I've gone out in, 99.9% of these cases are scientifically, you can explain them. Most people haunt themselves or haunt their own places thinking that it's something paranormal. And I think there's an element, and Lloyd will back me up with this as well, there's an element of the media that have caused this with all these sensational shows. So we need a book like Ghosted that says, hang on, you've got to look at this subjectively and critically. You've got to have, and I think even me as a medium, I have to have a critical eye for these things. And I think there's too many people, that highly sensitive people, maybe psychic medium investigators as well, that they're just more leaning towards their belief than anything else.
So here's the issue that I have with that. And this deals, we're moving into chapter 3 now, which deals with bias, the things that can bias you towards paranormal experience. This is also referred to in psychology as priming. Now, the issue with factors that can bias you towards a paranormal experience is that there are also things that can bias you against having a paranormal experience. Spot and on. This is something that's not discussed in the freaking book. That you can just as biased against an experience as you can for it.
I noticed that.
And the problem is that we can't really know people's experiences. If somebody says that they saw a ghost, we can't definitively say that they didn't, even in the face of some physical evidence. We can't definitively say that because we're not in their heads. We didn't see what they saw.
Oh, I'm so excited to jump on to, like, I want to jump into chapter 7 now. And we shouldn't, but it's like, because, to hell with it. Let's get into it. So from chapter 7 onwards, guys, I know we're jumping chapter 3, but this kind of blends in with chapter 3, right? And Craig is absolutely right that point is missing, because at uni, I'm known as, I've got bias. So, I mean, I've argued with professors, and I'm the first to admit, all right, I'm biased. Because I have a saying, ladies and gentlemen, my saying is experience trumps theory every time. A hypothesis is a theory that you test, right? Has a pattern to it. But your experience, your direct experience, it trumps that theory. Because I've had a near-death experience. Just other people, I was out in my body and everything else, and there was evidence that I brought back from that side of things. Mm-hmm. That experience that I've had, and I never really spoke about this a great deal until we were doing research and stuff in university, and when I was talking about it, it was more, no matter what you say is your hypothesis, or no matter what you say is your theoretical, your theoretical side, I cannot be critical because my experience goes against your very theory, because that is what I experienced. So you're right, Craig. You can't say if someone's had that experience that they're wrong, because it's their personal experience and it trumps any of your hypothesis and it trumps any of your theories.
Yep, but absolutely.
There is, and this is where maybe in my big dissertation, I'm going to work more on this, and we'll go down this a bit later. I don't want to jump into it now, but I think there's a way that we can blend both. And there's an example in chapter 7 that Craig and I were talking about earlier on, and we got too excited. We're like, right, okay, let's record, because we were getting into it there and then. And there's an example of having objective phenomena, something happening that then skeptical or even, and here's the thing, look, science is all about what we can measure, right? We get that. And there's materialism, which what you know, Craig is talking about here as well, where they're not willing to open up because they're biased against their particular belief. The thing about beliefs is they're an illusion, because beliefs can change. They're transient. We don't stick to the one belief.
And you know, the thing is that you have to know your philosophy to know where you're headed, because you have two completely opposite belief systems that lead to completely different conclusions. So, for example, a lot of people take materialism, which means that you believe that the universe is material, the stuff that you can touch around you is what's real, and your thoughts are not. Your thoughts are nothing. And then you have the other one, idealism, which means that ideas are real. And that means that everything that we touch and feel is coming from our thoughts. Now, you're going to reach completely different conclusions based upon that in a book like this. Because if you're using idealism for explaining this stuff, then you assume that what people experience is real. And you work from there. If you're using materialism, you assume that what they experience doesn't matter, because only the physical evidence is important. So these are two entirely different approaches, and if you don't take both of them, you're not really giving people the whole picture.
You know, there's a great part of the book that I think warrants exactly what you're talking about as well with these two theories is... We're jumping on to citizen science, right? I love with the citizen science, because there's an element in there where they talk about in the citizen science where they said it's these two opposing fields, but they both have validity. You can have someone who has their experiences or has a belief or is coming even from a secular or non-secular, you know, paradigm, and then you have someone on the opposite side, and you can't say one is right and one is wrong. There's an element in Ghosted where they talk about, you know, you need both in citizen science. You need the hardened skeptic that's going to investigate, plus is going to go through real strategy, setting everything up. And then you need the people that have got their belief systems and they just want an experience. And both are valid at coming together. The problem that we have is that that's great for citizen science, but we don't have it because we've got two distinct camps that cannot agree.
We do. And the thing is that when you jump into the theory portion, which is what they do here, you have to know your basic assumptions. And if you don't know your basic assumptions, you know, for example, in chapter 5, they talk about an interesting experiment where they sent three groups of people into the woods. Maybe it was four. It's not important. So they sent different groups of people into the woods and they said, turn on your flashlight when you have a paranormal experience. And so when they sent them out, you'd have one group that suddenly turned on a light. And then when the first one did, there's like a cascade effect of other people turning on their flashlights. And so you can interpret this two ways. One is that, oh, those silly people, they're just following the leader. The other one
domino effect,
yes.
Yeah.
Second one, though, is more interesting, which is the first people had the experience, and then the other ones were now primed, and they had the experience, too, and this became a shared experience.
Yeah.
And you can look at it both ways, and both of them are perfectly valid.
And it also leans into the fact that I don't like this kind of idea, like talking about what, like these experiences like EVP and seeing shapes. So pareidolia is one of my big things that, like, you know, most people, when they see shapes or they see information, they clearly, and that's kind of the same example where they're primed, because you get so many people sitting, you know, and you see this in maybe some of these UFO sightings that, you know, somebody points up to something and before you know it, it's on the news there was a UFO sighting, and yet, you know, it's a Chinese balloon. Well, essentially, it's a UFO, right enough, but there is that element where someone will say, well, can you see that? There's this, I don't know, a demon in the cloud. Before you know it, 100 other people are seeing a demon in the cloud. And this is rife in spiritualism. This is right, which is something I kind of, I don't like at all. And it's the same with the EVP. Someone will say, do you hear that? This is what they're saying. They're priming them. And then everybody else sees it. And then they think that's valid evidence. And that's not valid evidence. Again, that's like an aspect of pareidolia. That's they're following suit. It's that domino effect. So there definitely has to be, yes, it's a valid experience, but there's no empirical evidence for it. And this is the weakness that we have.
And yet, the fascinating thing is that there are situations where people have created a character, and then over time, they've developed it. There's a name for this, but I cannot for the life of me remember it off the top of my head. And then this thing basically comes to life, like via a Ouija board or some other means of communication. Okay. And you're actually creating these entities. And the question is, what is actually happening here? Because this is obviously something separate. So if you have
they often say as well that even in hauntings, you create them. I mean, a lot of people, a lot of investigators or parapsychologists will say that you can create these entities through your mind.
Yeah, but it doesn't make them not real.
Egregories. I don't know if I'm saying that right because I'm Scottish. That's what's created. And Dr. Mark, he wrote a book on it, Egregories. So it's like you're creating this being through mass consciousness.
I could be wrong with that, right enough. I think it is.
Or something. It's handy because we've got Google. You can just look it up. as he's looking. Now, there's an interesting thing. We're talking about people's experiences here, Craig, because there's a part as well in Chapter 7. And obviously, Chapter 8 talks about some of the equipment and things like that. And I want to go into the... Even professional investigators get it wrong because they're primed as well. But there's an element where they send someone in, they're having an investigation, their ISRAE team has gone in, and one of the investigators has a physical experience and is literally pushed and falls down. Now, this is what he says. Of course, the skeptical camp will try and, you know, you have to look at everything. I mean, you have to, I agree with this. You have to have a scientific explanation. There has to be, and when then there's no scientific explanation, then you have to look at something that's maybe out with the normal consciousness, you know, as we would think paranormal, but it's normal, really, essentially. But there was that time where he was physically, I want to say, for want of a better expression, physically assaulted by a force and was thrown to the ground. And that's his experience. Anybody watching that and claiming that can't say, well, that was a spirit, that would be this. And then there's an element where they say, well, if it was a spirit that is going to push him, there we could have it on camera. Therefore, there would be some kind of appendage that would push and make an indent. And they rightfully say that it could be weather, it could be atmosphere, it could be air, it could be anything else that pushes that in. And movement of the body or the fright or even in the mind can cause you to, you know, to make physical movements because of what you experience in the mind. I get it. But from my side of things, as a medium as well, that you're not necessarily going to have an appendage that pushes someone. Energy can push you because we're all made up of energy. It doesn't necessarily mean it needs to be a hand that pushed him and that he fell over. It could have been energy that you can't measure.
Yeah.
Because we're all made up of that energy. So where is the, you can't have every skeptical person or a scientific investigator just totally refute that and just look for a material explanation. There has to be a time where we have to bring in the potential of subjective experience as part of an empirical pattern. Maybe we can get subjective experience that can be measured in accordance with what's subjective.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes these subjective things have meaning.
And absolutely.
You don't see this in a materialist explanation, but meaning is a really big part of some of this. It's not always, for example, of whether the person felt a push, but if they were going, well, I don't believe any of this, and then suddenly got a push. And then there's no explanation for where this push came from. So this is a push with meaning, and that's a really important aspect of it, but it doesn't show up in a materialist explanation. By the way, the word is tulpa.
Tulpa. Now, look up egregores. I want to know, because I'm sure egregores are the same kind of thing. Yes, tulpa is you create the tulpa.
Yeah.
The being. But I don't know if egregores then must be a mass consciousness thing.
Okay. Well, start talking. I'll look it up.
This is brilliant, though. We could have a podcast episode and start to look up things that we think we understand but maybe don't. Anyway, so here's the other thing that I think, ladies and gentlemen, is that, as I say, there has to be an element where at some point we have to have a look at the subjective. Maybe there's a pattern. For instance, let's say in that example, there was, and a lot of investigators, a lot of parapsychologists wouldn't like to use mediums, but you know, there is a valid point of utilizing mediums. Now, if a medium can give evidence that stacks up along with the experience, along with the objective phenomena, maybe that is a way of bringing in subjective experience, as long as the pattern, there has to be a pattern. Empirical evidence has, there's a pattern to it, and it can be measured, right? And so maybe that's a way that we can bring in that subjective analysis. Maybe we can, you know, the person was pushed, but a medium and another area is able to identify information that may build up that story, build up that pattern. Now, of course, I'm going to be called out everything by every skeptic under the sun, but we have to be able to look at bringing in an element of subjectivity into what we measure, because if we don't, we're not going to get any further forward to trying to understand these things. There's a lot in transpersonal psychology which talks about our experience and finding meaning making in something, and how that can help us understand what we experience in life, the lived experience. You got it?
And there are ways to measure this too.
Yeah.
You know, that are scientifically valid. And one of them is that you have people with similar experiences, which are where you're using mediums. And if you collect enough data from people having similar experiences, then you can establish patterns, provided that the study is sufficiently blinded. Then you have something that you can measure there based upon meaning. So,
and you have to be careful in who you choose, what mediums or who you work with, because there's also another element of the book where they talk about, and I've noticed it a couple of times where they had people that had experiences that may have been highly sensitive people, that may have been mediumistic, and then they said they saw a being, but there was no evidence to it, and then they ran out or they couldn't explain it. The reality is we have to have evidence. Evidence is important in everything that we do. Even in mediumship, we need evidence. So even in hauntings and investigations, there has to be empirical evidence. And so you just can't have any medium or any intuitive that come in and say they feel something without having to just give evidence that I saw something in my mind and freaked out, and that's not measurable. And, you know, there's many papers out there in support of objective and objective phenomena, or you know, psi, if you like, you know, that's what we're talking about. What have we got? Have you got that Egregore yet? Was I wrong?
Yeah, a long time ago.
All right, what was I? Was I wrong totally, or was I?
No, you're right. It's a being that arises through collective consciousness.
Yes, and there's a book out already, Dr. Mark Sumner. I need to get in touch with him because we need to bring him on the show, actually, because that is really interesting, the egregores and the tulpa and stuff like that. So anyway, and here's the other thing as well. Even seasoned investigators, there's another aspect that all the equipment. Here's the other thing. Like I want to change that tactic a little bit, because there is nothing, I'm going to piss a lot of people off here, Craig. There is nothing out there that can actually measure and prove ghosts or spirits, right? Let's get that down. So when you go on to chapter 8 in the book, it talks about, you know, the EMF meters and various other meters and the cameras and everything is. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, it is measuring the atmosphere. It is only giving you an indication of an anomaly, something that changes. Does not prove a ghost. It does not prove a spirit, and it does not prove PK. So there is a valid argument in Ghosted for citizen scientists also to be trained and to understand the science as well as the beliefs and potential theories, and to understand it, because we're looking at blending both of these aspects in, and that's another thing that I like about the book. It's no holds barred.
Yeah, well, you know, with the when you're talking about ghost hunting equipment, you're talking about something that is measuring electromagnetic waves.
Yeah,
and so when you're measuring electromagnetic waves, what you're looking for in ghost hunting equipment is change. Now, you don't necessarily know what the change means.
No.
But you can use it in conjunction with other things and possibly draw meaning from it.
Yeah.
But in and of itself, an EMF meter just measures change in electromagnetic frequencies.
And ladies and gentlemen, neither does your friggin' phone app identify a ghost, right?
Nope.
If you're paying for a phone app, you're just paying your money out. Because now here's the thing though. There's arguments for utilizing intuitives and sensitives in some of these haunting cases that can actually bring in evidence. And I mean real evidence that can build up that pattern. And so for instance, maybe an intuitive, someone there can pick something. We've seen this in most haunted, but of course that's just for the TV and the show and everything else. But remember that if there is an anomaly on an EMF meter, if there's an anomaly on a sound level meter, if there's an anomaly on a FLIR camera, which is the infrared cameras and the heat camera, right? All it means is that something has changed in that atmosphere, and we as investigators should be like, that's interesting and it warrants further investigation, not that's interesting, it must be a ghost. Now, here's the other thing, and I think I had a great conversation with Steve, what was his name? I can't remember. We'll need to get him back on it. We were talking about the cameras that identify, you know, sticks, you know, your body, and they'll say that the ghost was there, and you go back and watch that episode or listen to that episode. I'll link it down in the description because it's really interesting. And as a photographer myself and utilizing Sony systems that can identify AI, a body through its AI imaging processor, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to pick up a ghost, because it could be picking up the transom, the million, it could be picking up a brick, it's something material that may be indicative to a potential limb or something. It doesn't necessarily mean it. So we have to be very, it's important that we are critical. We have to think critically as sensitives, but also as investigators and citizen science. I'm all for citizen science, all for it. with a critical eye.
It helps. Now, there are two types of ghost hunters, which, you know, it's perfectly valid to have both types. But there's the type that is very concerned about, and the book discusses this, that there are experiencers. They just want to go out and have a good time and experience stuff. They don't necessarily want to document it all. And then there's the other type that really wants to go for it. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit later about how, what it takes to do some good ghost hunting.
Oh, yeah.
And it's actually a lot harder than you might think. You know, so we've gotten beyond the part where we're talking about the psychology part, you know, because in chapter 5, for example, they take a look at, you know, what type of people experience hauntings, and apparently threat detection is really a big deal.
Yeah.
In that part. And they don't really have a good idea of the mechanisms, but they do have some theories.
And that's the thing, though, Craig. It is only theories. We don't have any evidence. We don't have any. I'm a big person for evidence. I'm the first to look towards looking for that empirical evidence. But from the theory, maybe we can find another route into something if we'd only open up our biases more and maybe come to an understanding. And I'm the first to say it. Like I've said it, I'm very biased on things because experience trumps theory. But I've learned now through my, you know, I'm in my final year now in master's, but I've learned now of being more critical with even the way I look at things from a mediumistic point of view. So I have to be able to bring that into, and I remember back in the day when I started, I have to go out and do an investigation. Someone's had some kind of anomaly. Someone's had some kind of experience in the home. And I went there all guns blazing, you know, Jock, the medium was going to go in there and no cameras, no measurements, no sound level meters, nothing. Just going in there as a medium, getting evidence and then realizing that that's not enough. It's not scientific. And it really doesn't mean anything. And so you learn over time that there's a lot more to this. And anybody who wants to go out there, ladies and gentlemen, don't get me wrong, if you want to go out there on a weekend and do a ghost hunt and it's for fun, and I'm a big person that will admit when I'm wrong as well, that's great. But all remember, there's a spiritual danger to these things as well. There's a psychological danger to these things because even if you go out there having fun and it's an experience and you do experience something that may not actually be paranormal, but to your mind is paranormal, here's the possible things that can happen is you can get yourself so upset. You might have had trauma in the past that just is a trigger to maybe what you experience in that moment. And before you know it, you could be dealing with maybe even potentially going into elements of psychosis or even causing psychosis because of your experience there. So even having fun ghost hunting events, if you're of a disposition where you suffer from depression or any kind of mental problems, any imbalance, then you shouldn't do it, right? Because you could be triggered very easily and that trigger is not something you look at. But of course, if you want to go out there and you want to go to a haunted place and a haunted location and you want to enjoy that in one of these ghost hunts, it is what it is. It's fun. 90% of the times that people are out there's nothing really scientifically proven for any of the anomalies that they face. And that's when you get into real investigations, which we're going to get into, because there's an element of health involved in this, mental health, mental wellness, and the damage that can be done to families that are under potentially paranormal or spiritual subjugation, spiritual crisis in a way. And so I think Ghosted goes a long way to educating us that this critical thinking is important and it's not easy to go and be an investigator professionally.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. You know, from my standpoint, when it comes to haunted houses, the bar is very high for me, and that's because I'm a general building contractor. So I'm in houses all the time. Sometimes I'm alone in them. Sometimes people are in them. But I know the kinds of things houses do. They, you know, hot spots and cold spots and and all this other stuff that have perfectly ordinary explanations. And so I'm primed, if you will, to, for any noise or whatever that's coming from a house, to not ascribe anything paranormal to it.
Nope.
And probably go look and see if it's something that needs to be fixed.
And here's the other thing that people don't realize, Craig, is that pests that may be in your home could be attributable to the phenomena that you're experiencing. Termites can cause noises, right?
No,
other pests,
really.
Rodents that are in your home, bats that maybe get into your attic, other pests in your crawl space. Before you know it, you're haunted and there's a demon from hell in your place, and turns out it's a freaking squirrel in the attic or something, or maybe bats or whatever. So actually, when we said bats, we could have cued the music, you know, cue that kind of Halloween type vibe. But there is a point to look at as well, and this is important in investigations. That has there been any pests? Have they got pest control? Has there been any pests? And maybe the experience you're getting is not just also from the HVAC system. As Craig was saying, as him and his work as an engineer, as a builder, that there's so many different things that get attributed to ghosts. So does wildlife.
Yeah, so of course, from my experience, you know, I've heard what rodents sound like in the attic. Bats are a little bit less noisy, but rodents definitely, because they scratch and they move and whatnot, and you can hear them. And most people, most of the time, will attribute it to that. They make certain types of sounds, and if you're, but the thing is that they're not like constant. So you might listen for it and then not hear anything, and then once you start to move around, you might hear it and then stop, and then you don't hear anything. Well, the rodent's also listening to you. It stops whenever you stop. So it can be a little bit harder to find them because you have a conscious entity working not to be heard. So my point is that, you know, we're all coming from different spots, and this makes it more challenging to know what any one person is experiencing.
And I think it's a good segue into what does it take to be a paranormal investigator, or not a parapsychologist, because you have to go to university for that. I used to do a lot of studying, but let's jump in, Craig. What it takes to really do this in a professional level, because I think that's something. And just cue for a promotion of the book. Lloyd Auerbach would be really proud of me for promoting this as well. And guys, I sent you an email today to Israel to come and do something in PDN with us. So Craig and I is expecting a response from you. But let's talk about, and that's where I think Ghosted is invaluable to those who want to go a little bit deeper, have got a real interest in parapsychology, in the paranormal, and want to take it a bit further. What does it take to really do this in a professional level, Craig?
Yeah, this was really an excellent part of the book where they really dove into the details, and you could actually see what they needed to do. And, you know, one of the things that you absolutely need to do for any ghost hunting investigation is control your environment.
Absolutely.
And that means nobody in, nobody out, except the investigators. And you have to know where the investigators are all the time.
Yep. Absolutely.
Anytime you lose that, you lose the ability to control the environment, which means you don't know where the noises are coming from.
And you need
don't know what's happening.
And you need to learn to take measurements before any investigation starts. You need to have a whole background on the case. You need to have look at historical analysis. You also have to look at the environmental analysis as well. And you have to measure everything, because if you haven't got a baseline control of the environment and a baseline measurement, then anything you experience is worth nothing, really. Well, that's a little bit thrown away, but it's not valid, essentially.
Well, so let me just add to this a little bit. So if you if one or more people has an experience of an entity, let's say, this is, whether they measure it or not, this is evidence that more than one person actually felt that entity. But certainly any of your EMF readings and ghost hunter equipment mean nothing if you don't have a baseline.
No, exactly. Because
you have to know beforehand, before you do anything, how much variation you're dealing with in that environment. And you have to, for example, know, you know, if you get close to the wall, you may run into electrical, which is definitely going to affect your EMF equipment. Because, you know, for example, if you're running computer line and phone line and power lines, you have to keep them about a foot apart. If you run them parallel to each other, less than a foot apart, then you start getting interference in your computer line from the EMF signals coming from the power line. So, and your EMF equipment may be more sensitive than that, in which case you're busy reading your power outlet. So you have to be careful about stuff like that. And you also have to be careful
who's in your team, right? The team has to be psychologically profiled. You have to identify, you know, yes, you have to have skeptics and you have to, you know, have a skeptical person in the team. You have to have various members of the team as well. But everybody has to really be psychologically evaluated. And also, it's important, ladies and gentlemen, that you, and this is something that I think Ghosted is great for as well, is that you have to be aware of your anomalous psychology and you have to be aware of your personal psychology. You have to be aware of psychology at a level that a little bit of how the mind works and how even trauma and things would work as well, and understanding that. It's not just about going in and investigating and putting up an infrared camera and doing that. If somebody comes to me and they are experiencing something serious, then there's a lot goes into it, because you also have responsibility not only to the team, but you have responsibility to the people that you're perhaps investigating or the environment, because you could leave them in a worse shape than when you first started. So there has to be professionals in the team. There has to be an element where you understand psychology, or you have a psychologist involved with you, or a parapsychologist, or even a psychiatrist that can work with you. It's not just a case of you and your friends getting together. I mean, sure, if you want to do it on a weekend, but professionally, seriously, take education. And it's, again, there's a part of Ghosted where I can't remember the name of the machine. You might remember it better than me, Craig, but it took them like 4 hours or something to get this whole setup with all the cables. And remember that there's health and safety that you need to take into consideration as well.
Well, you know, certainly you do have a lot of setup, because you have to have cameras everywhere where people can enter the building. Video. You have to have video where anybody
it is
can
video.
Enter.
And for those of you who are listening, you're not going to see this, but I'm actually holding up a Sony ARV5, which is used for video and photography and everything else. And you can go in with, you can't just go in with something like this. There has to be a lot more. You can have many cameras that set up. You probably need to go in with cameras in every doorway. You need to have everything, as Craig says, your environment has to be locked down.
Yeah. And then you also need to make sure that your team members are not wandering off and maybe having a toke somewhere during the investigation that can change the environment.
When your team member experiences something, remember, be aware that, and they talk about this in Ghosted as well, is that can put, it's like that domino effect that we talked about earlier, Craig, isn't it? That can be that one experience and the rest experience it. You know, have the devil's in the details, essentially. Make sure that, you know, that you're aware of that can happen. Because if the two of you are sitting in a dark room and somebody experiences something, as sure as hell the other person's going to experience it as well. not everybody's going to be like me and go like that. And I'm going, no, no, no. I never.
It kind of depends upon your group, because there's always the person that doesn't. There's the person that experiences everything, and there's the person that experiences nothing.
And get the ego out.
Yeah.
You cannot have
who's in charge of everything that never experiences anything because they're too busy trying to make sure everybody's on task.
Or the medium's all about them. Or if you do work with a medium, it's all about their experiences and what they know and everything else. And remember that they're just a tool. We're all just a tool. And we're trying to build a picture up here. We're trying to actually build a pattern so that we can get a story and say, well, this is evidential. There's so much in the book that is brilliant. There's so much to learn from it. But again, I'd reiterate, there's a lot of it that's a snooze fest if you're not academically minded in a certain way. But then if you are, then it's brilliant. But I think it does, Craig, go to support that it's not easy to just go in and investigate anomalous phenomena.
That's right. Yeah, it is. It's not particularly easy. And there is, if you have a better grounding in psychology, which is what this book will give you, then you'll be better prepared to understand, you know, what these phenomena actually mean. If you're, you know, when you're dealing with priming, you can ask yourself about the environment you're looking at. How am I being primed? Am I being primed to have the experience? Or am I being primed to not have one? Because the things in your environment, and not just the environment, but, you know, for example, if you have people in the group that are terribly negative about experiences, you know, very, very skeptical from the outset, that is priming you to not have an experience.
Yeah, absolutely. You need a good balance. Yes, we need skeptics to go in with us, or we need, I don't want to say skeptics, because you've got pseudo-skeptics and you've got, I'd like to say, for me, and this is just my opinion, ladies and gentlemen, is that you have to have a skeptical mind, not necessarily be like a pseudo-skeptic or something, you know. It's just, like, imagine James Randi going into investigation where you'd be totally freaking screwed. You know, obviously he's not here anymore, so it doesn't really matter, but there are other skeptics to be aware of. But it's important to have them, because it is important for them to say, no, hang on, there's a potential other explanation for this and we need to look at this. I've been involved in many, many haunting cases, and there's very, very few that turn out to be worthy of further investigation. And I would say that most people, and I think it comes very apparent in Ghosted, I don't know if you feel the same way, but I think most people haunt themselves. Essentially.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point, because all of reality is basically coming from our minds. Yeah. So when a person is haunting themselves, well, you know, every experience we have, it is in our minds. So if we're haunting themselves, this is just one more experience in their mind. So it's really hard to say if all of reality is coming from somewhere inside of us, then where do ghosts fit in? And you have to be able to answer that question to be able to say whether they're real or not.
And, you know, here's the thing as well. For those of you that don't believe in ghosts or don't believe in spirits or have no had any of these experiences, or maybe experiences that I've had, your belief in something is not a precursor to its reality of existence. Just because you don't believe it. Yeah, exactly what we're talking about. It's prime. Just because you don't believe it, don't mean it don't exist.
That's correct, yeah.
William James had a great saying, and I can't remember. I love William James, and I can't remember word for word, but he did say, one of his quotes was that the inference of demons should come up again. It's, I can't remember, some we missed, but I will put that quote, because I can't remember it, and it's over there in the book, but I have used that quote many times. But he did say that the phenomena of the belief or knowledge of demons comes up again doesn't effectively, whether you believe it or not, doesn't really matter. Their existence is not a precursor to your belief. So that quote's really good, and it's something that, and I'm not espousing demons or anything. That's for another episode. But the seed of what he's saying Because, you know, William James is very pragmatic in his psychology. And I think that's important as well. There's an element of pragmatism that, we have to blend into our measurement and our objective and our subjective analysis or experiences as well, in the lived experience. So, you know, before we finish off, what's a final thing that you want to say about Ghosted?
The thing I want to tell people about Ghosted is it's a college level book. It's very much like reading a textbook for most of it. However, if you get through this book, you'll have a much better understanding of hauntings and experiences. And it will take some time. You'll have to do it slowly. And you'll have to think about, you know, basically most paragraphs, because every paragraph has something important to say, which makes it for very heavy reading. But if you do that, you'll be rewarded by a very good book.
Yeah. And I will finish off by saying that if you're academically minded, it's great. I loved it and hated it, right? and sorry, Brian, and all the rest of the team. I loved your book. I hated it as well. And sometimes I really wanted to go and pour myself a brandy or a whiskey with some of the things I was getting to. But I do see that there is a place for it, and it's warranted. And I think that Ghosted, there should be a version 2 that comes out of this, and I'd be looking forward to that, Craig. I think I think there's a lot more that we can do with this. But for me, just one other flash for you that are listening, you're not seeing it, but the book, we'll link the book as well. But this is the book, and I loved it. I said to Lloyd I was going to review it and stuff, and I loved it so much that I bought it in hardback, and I bought it in Kindle, because I hate making notes in books. I've got a weirdness about making notes in my book. I freaking hate that. So I'd rather buy the book and then Kindle. No, I'd rather buy the book and then Kindle so that I can write my notes in Kindle, because I hate messing up my books. There's some ism that I have about it. Even all my textbooks that I buy for uni, I buy them on Kindle and I buy them as well, which is stupid because it's double. It costs me more money. But yeah, guys, go out and get it. Go out and get it, guys. To the Ghosted team, and actually Lloyd had written the afterword on this, and you know, I've got a great deal of respect for Lloyd Auerbach, and also he teaches courses at Ryan. So definitely that's a great place to go. There's not many places that I would recommend to go and get good information. And if you're interested and you want to learn parapsychology properly, then, you know, you've got the Coastline Institute in Edinburgh University. There's other universities, but you're not going to get a good, well-paying job out of parapsychology, and you're going to be writing and reading an awful lot. Don't think that it's going to lead you to fame and to the world there. But really, if you have got an interest and you want to understand, and here's the other thing about paranormal phenomena and from Ghosted. From learning what's in this book, I think, and I don't know whether you would agree with this, Craig, I think it gives you a good understanding of life.
Well, there are aspects of psychology that they touch on that will remind people
absolutely
about their own biases and how your basic outlook can affect how you see things, and how your environment can affect how you see things.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to us and being with us, with Craig and I. This has been awesome. I thoroughly enjoyed it. We're going to be back regularly. So Deadly Departed is now back. We've got loads of guests coming up. We've got loads of subject matters. You're going to be able to soon also go on the website, send us a voice message of anything, any questions that you have that we can bring up. Any guests that we've got bringing up, you can do that as well. And also for you guys that I'm very proud of this, for you guys that are professional investigators, that have paranormal teams, that have good books like this, that are authors in parapsychology or in the paranormal, we now have, because we get, and you see it from a video that I put out ages ago, we get SEO companies, marketing companies trying to get in with us at PDN because we're a powerhouse online. And so what we've done is we've developed, and it takes a lot to keep running everything. We've developed a professional directory. It's only at the moment $35 a year. So if you've got a book to promote, then get in there. You just go on the website, the thing's there. And if you're a professional investigator and you want to get some kudos and get in with Paranormal Daily News, then get yourselves on there. At the moment, as we're developing it, because it's a new feature, it will get a lot more expensive in the future. So now $35 a year is a no-brainer. That's going to help us develop Parawise magazine that we got coming out, where we're bringing the academic to the layperson as well. We're really looking forward to that. We've got PDN books. We've got our community, which Craig and I run. Yes, it's been really quiet, but we've had some good discussions and things there. So come and join our community. The community's free. And there's going to be classes and probably guests that we'll bring in to teach classes and do lectures in the community as well. So we're glad that we're back, and there's so much to look forward to. And you're getting a little insight into the discussions that Craig and I have, and we've had some doozies. So we're going to be doing this on a regular basis, and I'm looking forward to it. Craig, how you feel about everything?
I feel good.
I feel good. So, and of course, when I'm not here, then Craig will be here, and there's a lot looking forward to. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on Deadly Departed. I'm going to pass it over to my co-host, who will give you his final words. Craig, over to you. I feel like I'm on the news. Over to you.
Yeah. Thank you very much, John. look for us on Deadly Departed in the future, and be prepared to be entertained and informed. Thank you all very much.
God bless. See you soon, guys.